Greetings. I am very pleased to be here and to begin my first sermon. Now, I usually have a manuscript, and here indeed I have one, but after I did it and I wrote it all, I decided I wasn't going to give it because I felt a little too wordy and blathery. And I don't want to do that. It's not really how I do these things. I know how to write, and I always have my high school English teacher sitting on my shoulder here, making sure I follow all the rules. But preaching isn't just reading a manuscript. I like to use a manuscript for many reasons. Number one, it helps with your timing. You can get off the page very much, and the next thing you know, you're running too long, and as all ministers know, no one is saved after 20 minutes. So, I like to use one also because for those who are hard of hearing, knowing that they can get a manuscript and that it'll be available when they arrive, which I try to do every Sunday, enables them to read along. Yes, sometimes I leave the page. Sometimes I type the manuscript and then put it aside. But most of the time, I have it there. And just partly so that everybody can participate as fully as they wish. But anyway, here I am. And I'm going to try to improv it instead. Let me begin by commending your leadership and all of you for making the choice to engage, to participate, to take up the interim ministry program. I think it's a good program. Jury's out among you, but let's see how you feel as time goes on. And in particular, I want to thank you for hiring me. You'll get to know me as time goes on. Emerson says that he wants to know who the preacher is. It's not all abstractions. Good preaching always involves an element of self-disclosure, an element of it. But let me tell you a little bit about me now. I'll tell you more in 2 weeks when I do a sermon on sources, and I'll try to kind of talk about some of the major influences, philosophical and personal and spiritual, in my life, so that I answer that question I told visitors not to answer: where are you coming from? So you get an idea, a better idea where I'm coming from. But just briefly, so you know the very rough outline, I'm a sixth generation Unitarian Universalist. My great-great-grandparents, they may have been more than that, because they immigrated from New London, where there was a Universalist church very active in the 1830s, to Wyoming Valley, Pennsylvania, and joined a little Brooklyn Universalist church. And then after a couple of generations, they got more prominent, and as often happened, they became Unitarians, a little more social cachet. And that went on for a few generations, and I grew up with my siblings in the Shaker Heights, Ohio Unitarian Church. So it's kind of been there in my family history and tradition. And the church and the theology has kind of changed. We're changing tradition, but there's some continuities too, and they've been major in my life, and I'll share them with you as time goes on. I was a history major at college. I like reading history. You'll figure that out too, because you get a lot of history in most of what I say. I like camping. I like reading. I like baseball. And as I said, in 2 weeks I'll share a little more of the things I like and that inspire me and inform my work. Now today's sermon. As ministers, we're usually trying to touch a vertical dimension in our lives, what I like to call a certain mystical sense of deep meaning or exalted connections to things bigger than ourselves. And I do try to do that. And yet today, kind of counter type, I'm wanting to give a very matter-of-fact description of the interim ministry program and how I understand it and what you can expect. And the reason I want to do that is just so you get a feel for what I think I'm trying to do and to invite you to participate in that process. This is not the professional coming in and laying a program on you. This is a dialectical process. I have the knowledge of a professional that has done some of this before. You have the knowledge of who you are, what you need, what makes you sing, literally. So together we can take a program and adapt it creatively to what's going on here. To what purpose? Helping you go from where you are today to calling about 20 months from now a full-time on-site minister of your own. And doing that with eyes open, all of one heart, and with great optimism and creative energy to that end. And I've seen it happen before, and you know there's no single way to do it, but there are some touchstones that help. As I want to make clear, and I'll say several times today, there's no formula for any of this. There are, however, five areas of focus, or what have been called five developmental tasks, that it's clear attending to helps that process along. So what are those tasks? Getting a sense of your history, a renewed sense of identity, having appropriate changes in leadership, strengthening your relationships outside of the congregation, and adopting a new vision. So let me go through each one of those a little bit in time. Helping the fellowship, the congregation, know and appreciate your history. Now, everybody in this room knows more of your history than I do. Even the people who were brand new, who walked in here today, know as much of your history as I do. So this is a perfect example of where we have to be in dialogue. And it's something I like doing. I told you I was a history major. And I'm enchanted and inspired by these little stalwart groups of liberals, you know, especially in a place like Orange County. And I just keep on keeping on, month after month after month. How do they do it? What keeps them going? Well, you got to tell me. And I also enjoy, I know in particular, your needs. You've been really without an on-site minister for a long time. You have a part-time minister who's an able preacher and a good pastor in crisis, but didn't live nearby. I live nearby. I did that on purpose. I can walk to work, and I can walk to your house, and I want to walk. Well, I like driving most of the time, especially if you live out of town, but I like to visit. And so, especially when a dinner is offered in review. So do invite me to come over for tea and crumpets, for coffee, to meet somewhere, and come to my office, whatever. Tell me about how you got involved. So this will happen over the next months. And I will, hopefully, out of all that, deliver a sermon series so that it familiarize everyone with my kind of aggregate stories thrown together and my effort to draw a narrative strand through it with your help. Well, getting that sense of history is important for a person like me as a history major. I can't have a hard time conceiving how someone can attend to the second task, that is a new and honest sense of your identity as a community right now. How can you do that if you don't know where you come from? We have to know. It's like citizens of a free country. If we don't know what our founders meant when they were talking about freedom, how can we exemplify it today? You have to be able to know where you're coming from to know what your duties and responsibilities and opportunities are here now in the present. And the same, and another thing I like to say about this identity thing, you know, many of us, probably all of us, have gone through, have had our heart broken at some point. And men in particular are great whenever that happens of immediately running out and getting a replacement girlfriend, you know, as fast as they can, or boyfriend, whatever. And doing that to kind of relieve the anxiety in someone. Now, but everybody will tell you, and those of us who made that mistake will tell you loudly, that a better strategy is to kind of take some time to mourn the loss, to ask yourself, perhaps in reflective dialogue with a trusted friends, with a therapist, a professional, with your pastor, whatever, to get a handle on, well, what was good about that and what was not so good? How could I grow from this? What's the gift here? And so on. And coming out of that place, you begin to get a stronger sense of who you are and what you can do and where your strengths are and what your promise holds. And out of that place, suddenly you're very attractive to other people because you're grounded and centered. You're not clingy, desperate, or any of that. Well, it's the same for congregations. You are a little shaky right now, long-time leadership with a known quantity. And now, well, what do you have? It's an unknown quantity, a quality. You don't know for sure. You're not. You have a vision of where you want to go. Will it be bumpy? Will it be smooth? Well, take this time to get a sense of identity. And when you get coming out of the sense of history and some workshops and efforts that I'll do to help you wake up to these issues and get a handle, wrap your heads around them and collectively become aware. So you can say, well, we're the church that, I don't know what, you know, we're the church that's friendly, we're the church that reaches out, we're the church that gives a damn about social justice. You have to know, you have to decide, and you have to kind of be real about it. Who have you been? Who are you now? So that you can get all your creative energy together, and we're all singing from the same sheet, and there's this whole is much greater than the sum of the parts synergy that out of which the sky is the limit. Now, okay, get a sense of our history, get a sense of our current identity. A third task is to facilitate changes where appropriate in leadership. And that could be professional leadership if it were somebody's, if the sense was, you know, that one of the staff was not that strong, how do we make them stronger? I put a lot of energy into, I'm not big on letting people go, but I'm very big on helping people grow into their best professional capacity. And I'm a big believer in positive reinforcement and focused attention. I'll do staff supervision and try to get our staff to work as a team and to understand better, you know, what everybody does and how we all can support each other. And that has not really happened, partly because you haven't had an on-site minister to attend to it much. All right? So, facilitate changes, sometimes in lay leadership. A lot of our churches can have, especially unelected committees, can end up being attended by the same stalwart, loving, hardworking souls year in and year out, and some new blood wouldn't hurt. And I try to encourage that, and see people that I think might thrive in a new role and usher them forward. Also, the fourth task is like they call nurturing lateral relationships. It's mostly trying to make sure you're in, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time. We have all these congregations who've gone through some of the same things almost the same time. And so one of the best ways to not reinvent the wheel is to be engaged in district and denominational activities. And actually, you do that okay. But I like doing it too, and I look forward to leading a delegation to district assembly of delegates. And not now, I was at our general assembly denominationally this last June in Providence, Rhode Island, and it was great, and there was nobody from Fullerton there, which is all right. I had my last hurrah, you know, without being watched by... but in Portland this coming June, I want to be watched by a full delegation, and it's not, you know, it's here on the West Coast, not as close as it might be, but it's drivable, and there's a, you can take a train from Fullerton right to Portland, too. So, nurturing lateral relationships, and that also can include getting involved in interfaith activities and local engagements that have been important in the congregation's past and to this day. And then finally, the last is kind of adopt a new vision. Well, I don't really feel that's my responsibility. I feel it's my responsibility to get you guys to the place where you're poised to adopt a new vision in dialogue with the minister you call. But that you believe in yourselves and you believe in your collective engagement and passion for our faith and for one another and for this community enough that you're not afraid to find a minister whose lead you're willing to follow and you know will be a healthy thing. And there's so many of, you know, I have to admit, it's funny when you're a minister because you meet all these other ministers. And in all honesty, sometimes, at least at first, and sometimes after even quite a while, their gifts remain to me a bit elusive. I ask, you know, well, what are they good at? But usually, it's been my experience that if I get to know them better, there's much they're good at. And it's mostly, I end up ashamed for having kind of thought so-and-so was a lightweight or didn't have that much energy. And then you actually watch them and you recognize the depth of what they can do. And again, I end up humbled and honored to be part of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association and to try my best to live up to the standard. But I say this because there's a lot of good ministers out there. And there are one or two or five who would just die to be here and would do a fantastic job. So, not to worry about that, but what you need to do is get you ready to do that with great enthusiasm. Now, I'll be doing a lot more than obsessively checking off tasks in the days and weeks and months ahead. I'll do, first of all, a lot of watching. Some of you will begin to ask, you know, Fur doesn't talk much. He just sits there on his hands. The trick my father taught me when I was an over-anxious child. Sit on your hands, and then you won't blurt it out. So, but I try to just not project answers onto things, but just watch and see. See what you're doing well. See what you're doing excellent, you know, because plenty of things I'm sure you are. And it may not be exactly what I was used to so far, but doesn't mean it isn't really good. So I spend a lot of time watching, and I spend a lot of time asking questions about, well, why is this? Like, things have come up. One thing that often comes up in some of our congregations, you know, you use the word worship. Well, no, I don't know the word worship. That gives me the creeps. I don't like that word. Yeah. Well, why? What is it about it that you don't like? And then getting into dialogue about where are the touch points, where are are things packed emotionally? Because there's energy there usually if we can just carefully unpack it in a safe dialectical context. And I hope to create those contexts for this kind of question and probing. And another thing I want to do is demonstrate, exemplify, insofar as I'm able, what an on-site full-time minister looks like, walks around, and behaves like. You know, that's why I moved to Fullerton. That's why I wanted to be in this town, not your Belinda, not Anna, because you deserve that. And you see what most of us do and how most of us do it. We become, you know, in the old days, ministers were chosen in the early church and early Puritanism. They were chosen from the community, somebody they just thought had the spirit and they trusted and was a good, hard, focused, loving soul. They would choose them and then they would be ordained. Well, life is different now. But still, that notion of coming from us and being among us. Yes, you're anointed. Hands are laid on you. But the minister, the reverend, you know, most of our members don't realize, I'm not to be revered. That title, the reverend, means one who reveres. The minister is one who reveres life, reveres the souls of each of us, reveres the creative process in the midst of all we do, honors it, holds it up as holy, worth loving, worth attending to. I'll be leading some adult religious education classes, and I'll be delivering sermons that focus a lot of attention, especially the first year, first 14 months, on ministry, on what ministry is. And these are kind of hard sermons for me to give, but I've been spending this last 5 years, as I've been really focusing on interim work, I'm spending a lot of time asking that question. What are the requirements? How is ministry understood? And you'll be the benefactor, I hope, of that thought and effort on my part, beginning next week when I'll do a sermon on the art and practice of ministry and set the stage for what I believe is my work. Now, one of the things you'll notice already is little changes to the order of service. This, I point this out because for a couple of reasons. Number one, historically and traditionally, the worship and the worship hour is the one thing in Unitarian congregations that the minister has absolute authority over. Everything else, you don't. You know, so there's an element, well, I have that authority, I'm going to use it. But it's not so much my ego. I try to clear myself of that. But because there is that authority, because ministers do expect to play with it, and because we think about it all the time, how do you create sacred space? How do you manipulate time and space in a shared environment to bring people epiphanies and changes of heart? We do study that. We do try to do that. And I have thoughts about it, and I will introduce things. But none of this is etched in stone. It's all a dialogue. If you don't dig it, you know, talk to me about it. Come to the worship committee. Talk to me in the coffee hour. And also, I'm going to begin in 2 weeks on the 31st, and then not always the last Sunday of the month, but the last Sunday in which I deliver a sermon of every month, I'm going to have a talk back. Not as part of the sermon, but when the worship is closed and we go get a cup of coffee, people who have appointments and their children, they run off. Then we come back and we'll have an appointment and we'll have a talk back. And you can attend to questions from today's, on the 31st. Today's, next week's, the week after. All right. So you talk to me and let me know if this or that or anything I did you didn't like. That's okay. Doesn't mean I'll change, but I'll hear you, and I want to hear you. And mostly, I have pretty good marks for, in fact, hearing and changing when necessary. So yes, I'll make changes. You'll note, for instance, this little quote at the top. I was trying to find some. That's the first real change I did. And a little change at the end, you're going to find. I like the quiet before church begins better than any preaching, wrote Ralph Waldo Emerson. And why I chose that is, well, because it's the quiet before the storm today. And also the other reason is last week I came in and I liked the music. It was beautiful. Dwayne this morning. And Dale came up to me and said, or maybe I forget who it was. Somebody said, you're not supposed to talk during this. So I remind you, we like the quiet in the church. But to begin, thank you. I'm proud and very happy to be here. Many helpful people have made my landing particularly soft, especially Doris Dressler-Clark and Mike Mahaffey, and of course our president, Laurel Estrada. I'm enjoying getting to know you, and I look forward to knowing all of you as well as I know a few of you already. So may it be. And so may our time together be a time of growth and renewal, a time of curiosity and questioning, a time of choices contemplated and decisions creatively, collectively, and wisely made. A time in which we grow together just as each one of us grows uniquely more ourselves. A vital church with a vital message becoming an ever more engaged and dynamic religious home to more and more people across this region. Thus do we pray. As we pray too for fair skies and warm balmy winds as we sail this ship into the beautiful, wonderful voyage up ahead. May it be so. Amen, shalom, and namaste.